Hey there, listener. This is Sierra, one of your Interface Podcast co-hosts. During the recording of this week's episode with Dean May, there were some Wi-Fi issues, and as a result, some of the audio was distorted. This definitely doesn't take away from the awesome conversation, and we hope that you can still enjoy this episode as much as we did when we recorded. For those keeping score out there, Wi-Fi 2, Interface Podcast Crew 0. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to Interface, a podcast where we connect technology and culture through conversation. Interface is brought to you by Empower at Pros. Empower is dedicated to attracting, developing, and retaining Black talent at Pros. Pros helps people and companies outperform by enabling smarter selling in the digital economy. I'm your host, Jennifer Plummer. My co-host is Sierra Barnes.
Good morning, Jennifer Plummer. It's so weird saying our first and last names when we're normally super casual.
Today, we are really excited for our guest, Dean May, to join us. He is the Director of Partner Success Data Exchange Platforms at Capital One. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And also, share this experience.
Be sure not to call him Odin, his government name, because only his mom and dad calls him that.
That's right.
From one of your talks.
Right. If I hear that, I'm in big trouble.
You're not in trouble. So we want to have a fun time today.
Awesome.
So we'd like to start out with just, you know, tell us, what's your story? How did you get to be what you're doing today?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, again, thanks to you both, Jennifer and, you know, Sierra, for having me, you know, having me tell my story. I think for me, it starts in sunny Kingston, Jamaica, which is where I'm from. Grew up there as a child and ultimately moved here to the States around 2001. And so, you know, sort of always was interested in technology, even as a child, trying to take the toys apart, you know, much to the chagrin of my parents. But, you know, that was the sort of child I was, always interested in you know, what is doing this, right? How can these sort of gadgets and different things happen in that way? I'm from the Napster era as a child. So also, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how are these things working? And more importantly, how can we leverage it, right? I think as a young Black boy at the time, also remember being, you know, very young, looking for opportunities, right? Like what could be done. So, you know, went to ODU, so I'm prepping today. If you could see my shirt here, so that's Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, where I studied electrical engineering and computer engineering, right? And I went very, very far in that program, a ton of math, as with all engineering programs, until I got to something like systems and signals, which is like, you know, maybe it was vector calculus, some super hard math. But I realized that, you know, here I'm on the one hand taking these math classes, you know, applied math, but I'm also taking these programming courses and I'm enjoying that. And I'm also doing that in my spare time of building websites and, you know, trying to learn how to leverage that. And so ultimately switched my major to computer science, and I haven't looked back since. You know, closer to the end of my ODU career, I started to build a little startup, as I called it, Jamity. It started as a music video type of website. You know, anybody familiar with Worldstar Hip Hop at the time? I was on that site a lot, but I wanted something that was a little bit more polished, a little less, you know, that had less of a stigma on it, where, you know, maybe you could find different types of music. So I spent time building that. And then realized there was an opportunity at that time, this is like maybe 10 or 12, 13 years ago, to do, you know, what I called at the time social media aggregation, which is sort of how are people interacting with the things that you're selling, right? So as opposed to just having a platform to put your content on, how are people interacting? Are they talking about you on social media? And if so, you know, who are the folks that are most likely to help you translate what you have into dollars? Is it the person that's talking about you? Are they advocating for you on other threads and where they're having conversations? And we use some sort of algorithm to figure that out. So I had something built had a fun time with that. And then ultimately, you know, my daughter, my children were on the way. So then I figured I'd go get a real job. So, yeah, so that led me to Capital One, which is a tech company in banking. My destination at the time was not Capital One. You know, Capital One, you know, as you, it's very huge here in Richmond, Virginia, where I am now. This is where I'm based. My wife's based. Our families are here. So really, I just needed an excuse to get out of town. We wanted to head to Atlanta. So I figured I'd take an interview at Capital One. Then I come back and say, hey, it didn't work out. I'm going to these other opportunities. But then I learned that they are the tech company in banking and they had a lot of exciting opportunities. And so I joined there, spent a ton of time, left there and went to GSK and did some healthcare transformation for a while. I think that's the talk that you referred to earlier, mm-hmm. Where, you know, we really built some cool things over there and then came back to Capital One 2 years ago to lead the partner success team. So what we do today is we work with the external entities, the mint.coms, all Walmart, all, anywhere that you see the Capital One logo, that's not a Capital One sort of entity. My team is working to pull off those partnerships and integration. So that's me in a nutshell. You know, could dive into any one of those areas. There's lots of stories to tell for sure.
Oh, which story should we ask about? I would say, I think the social media aspect, the aggregation, because that's such a big topic right now, right? With Facebook mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So yeah, do you have any interesting stories or anything interesting that you gleaned from that experience?
Yeah, I did. You know, so I, you know, in hindsight, I was doing this. And if you look at the time frame that I was doing it 13 years ago, there wasn't really anyone else doing that, right? There wasn't this concept, you know, people sort of trying to mine consumer data, which is commonplace now. You could, you know, there are 15 million companies doing that right now. So I had a lot of fun actually doing that because this was in the college era. And so this was sort of my, you know, I was looking for at that point in college, I remember looking for the best of both worlds. I wanted to be a part of, you know, sort of a hip hop type of conversation, but a tech conversation. And a lot of the things that I've done, you see me sort of looking for the meld of the two, right? The culture and the tech. And so that gave me a ton of opportunity to do that. So we did like, you know, a lot of radio hostings. We did, you know, some ABC level, B-list, you know, folks that we could reach out to and get to on social media and say, hey, we could sort of pull this data for you and work with them. So, you know, it was a good time. Data was much more easy to get, right, at that time. Mm-hmm. This was before these conversations of sort of data sovereignty or who owns the data. Yeah. Right? Do yeah. I own my data? Do you own the data? So this was right. free for all. Instagram had like an open API and we just had at it. So it was fun. But I think the conversations shifted dramatically from a data perspective, right? Mm-hmm.
How has that shift impacted sort of what you do coming from all those years ago of, oh, it's basically a free-for-all. I can pull whatever I want. And now having all of these guardrails and red tape, and has it had any benefits or has it all just been, now we got to jump through all of these?
There's always, you know, I'm a glass half full person. And you'll learn that about. So there's always some glass that's half full. So on the glass half full side, it's a ton of opportunity here in tech in general now for folks that can come in. You don't even have to be technical. You just have to have a good, you know, head on your shoulders and sort of figure out these things like common sense policies for data ownership, sovereignty, different things like that. How can companies leverage data, right, and do so in a safe way? We're still in an exciting phase of our journey, if you want to call it exciting, because, you know, as a global society, we don't yet have, outside of GDPR and some of the others, we're just having emerging regulations, right? We're not yet having, you know, even in the US, like blanket regulations for data. So companies are trying to figure it out. They're trying to toe the line and figure out where they can sit. What can they do safely to get a leg up on their competitors without, you know, being egregious? And that's an opportunity, I think, for folks looking into this space. They could get into the data space, which is huge now, and even beyond the policy side. You know, so that's one area. I think on the glass not so full side, I think that as things start to get regulated, they start to become exclusive, right? So if you think of sort of me and my little college apartment, all I had was a laptop, right? And I'm sort of plugging away. I had a laptop and a little bit of, you know, oomph, and I'm going at it. And I didn't have any of these friction areas in my way, right? And if, you know, left to my own devices, if I was in the right place, right time, maybe get more funding, I could have built something, you know, even larger at a larger scale than I had it at the time. And that would have been, you know, an achievement. With more regulation becomes more friction, and it becomes harder for someone with just a laptop to, you know, and an idea to spin up something. So there's a counterbalance to it, more opportunities on the scale side in the corporate world, I suppose, with less opportunities for a small startup or a small person to get into it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I wanted to ask, what does a director do? Like, what is, you know, we kind of have different levels in organization. You've got your individual contributor, now you got your managers. As a director, what do you do? How is that different than the management level? How is that different than the VP level?
I think that this is a great question because, you know, just for the timeline of my corporate career, I moved pretty quickly to this level. So it was only maybe, you know, n number of years ago, 5 years ago, that I was literally sitting there with the same question. You'd be like, what does a director do? This person does nothing, right?
And then, similar thoughts.
Yeah, it's like, what is this? No, but there's many things that we do, all jokes aside. But the one and most important thing is people. People, people, people. That's what we do, right? So, you know, most of our day is spent thinking about teams, building teams. Anything worth doing is going to require more than just yourself to do it. And therein introduces a gigantic challenge, right? How to get many people to look in and row in the same direction. People have motivations, people have different things. And coming from a software engineering background, you know, I like to say people are not computers, right? Mm-hmm. Software is easy. People are hard because people have different motivations. People have things going on at home. People have career goals, right? And you're trying to align all of these things to achieve some broad goals. So that's the first thing I would say, that's a director's job, right? People. And then the second thing that I would say is being ahead, right? So, like, you know, we're on this sort of, you know, we're on the crux of this conversation we're having is like diversity and Black and tech. And I told you, I like to meld my culture with my tech. So I'm going to use some of my own language. So anyways, so Nipsey Hussle, I don't know if you're familiar, right?
Yeah.
He said in one of his songs, he said, that's why they follow me, because they think I know the world, right? And so I would sort of, you know, present that as sort of the second thing that we need to know the way, right? Where are we going, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as a leader at any level, you can't be thinking about just today, right? What's happening tomorrow? Are you 6 months out? Are you 2 years out? Are you a year out? Right. Yeah. How are you working backwards from some grand end state goal and vision? And then have you identified the necessary resources, investments, different things that we need to get there? And are you prepared and able to get people and take them along that journey? Right. So that's what keeps me busy and the other people that are in a similar place. You know, hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Which now I have a more detailed question. Because I think we have that challenge too, as far as resource planning, what are their teams working on today? What are they going to be working on 6 months from now?
Right
now we're using Excel, which annoys me so much because it's just not very good for it. Is there a good tool for this?
Are you developing anything?
No. I'm familiar with Jira.
Yeah.
You know, I would offer what I'm familiar with, but then again, you know, I think you're going to have this is a challenging thing to do. No tool, sort of project management tool per se, is going to be the be all end all, right? Mm-hmm. I think what we need though is the right tool for the right place that we're at, right? Mm-hmm. So I've seen in my career, I've built some businesses, as I told you. I've also had the opportunity to be at the ground floor and seeing businesses be built. And I think that one of the most important things is if you're at the sort of level where you're trying to get going, get the things you need to get moving, right? Jump in that pool. And so if you're sort of at the beginning stages, I wouldn't sort of think about, well, in 5 years, we're going to need, it's today, right? So you're marrying up where, you know, so maybe you're 6 months, a year out and you get something that scales there and then incrementally scale. Jira is what I'm familiar with using. And when given the opportunity, I've implemented a Jira rollout as well.
Yeah, we use that for issue management, but not so much initiative management or that sort of thing. But
in the workplace, you have your standard tools such as the Jira or even Excel, as much as it pains us. But do you have sort of a system where you kind of go in and build your own, program for yourself to kind of help you manage your projects, kind of how where we're going to be in 5 years, your planning tool, have your own kind of system of developing that?
I haven't seen that in my own place, but I have seen that up close. So my wife is, she's a Scrum Master. She's also at Capital One now, but at the company she was at before, I saw them as actually the product that she was a Scrum Master for. They built their own Jira system to their standards. I've seen that. I haven't experienced it, so I'm not sure if it was done well or not. But I know that some folks do that. At Capital One, beyond just project management, the DNA of Capital One is innovation, right? And so the build versus buy conversation at Capital One typically leans towards the build side, right? Yeah. So Capital One has built a lot of exciting tools, but not a project management software.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally, a software engineer is going to be like, why would I reinvent something that exists if there's a good tool that's out there? But if there isn't a good tool that's out there, then you might be like, okay, what's going, you know?
And so it's a people. So you remember I told you a few minutes ago, it's also a people job. So I looked at the work that was happening at my wife's previous company. And I'm like, you could easily go and buy this thing. But then I realized exactly what they were doing, right? Sometimes in transformation, you have to plant that flag, right? If you are actually in the process of transforming your company from a non-tech company to a tech company, maybe you want to flex that muscle. Maybe you want to say, hey, go ahead and build that, right? Let's hire some software engineers. Let's get good at building stuff. And then let's transition that skill set over to our customer facing or our business driving things, right? So today you're building back-end software, you get good at that, but then transition it to revenue gen. I've seen companies do transformation that way as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to have us, you know, who's interested in the same things that you're doing?
Yeah. And so I mentor a lot of young people in this space. So it's a passion area. I would say, just like, you know, I said before, jump in the pool, right? The technology is, you know, if we wanted to become a doctor, right, the mandatory is, you know, sort of maybe 8 years in school. And there's no way around that, right? You can't sort of go perform a surgery and then take a, you know, film that and then say, hey, I'm a doctor now, give me a job. That would be ridiculous, right? You also can't do that if you want to build buildings or architect bridges or anything like that. But this thing called software, you're able to get a laptop, right? With some amount of computing power, access to the internet, and you're able to create software. You're able to show that you can solve problems independently and sort of package that into a portfolio and shop that around, which is exactly what I did. So coming out of, you know, my first job in tech my first formal job was me sort of showing the capabilities I had built for Jamity, right? And my resume was also a living, breathing website that pointed to those things, right? So the conversations in my interviews were less about this piece of paper that is a resume, and more about, hey, how'd you build that? What tech stack do you use? And we're starting to have these tech conversations. And they're like, yeah, I want to work with that guy, right? And so I would share that because that reality there is very powerful. It means that someone that's looking for an opportunity right now to get into a high paying career, right, could spend a year or so building up a portfolio. And that's why I mentor my folks, like, hey, just spend a year or so building up a portfolio, get your certifications in the things that are appropriate for today's tech world, and they'll have a ton of opportunities. And so that's what I would share for someone. Jump in the pool.
Yeah, that's good advice.
I have a question for you, Dean. So when we're talking about Black tech or Black in tech, you know, it seems from where I grew up, technology was not a big conversation, you know, until recent years. You know, my son luckily is now going to a STEM school where he's being introduced to robotics and computer science and all of this. But when we were growing up in school, you had very few people who were talking about computer science, and, you know, you don't need a ton of degrees to get into this field. And I was even listening to the news this morning, and they were talking about a lot of companies are moving from having this long list of experience doing something, then now they're looking at sort of skills, these transferable skills. And I'm jumping ahead a little bit, Jennifer, but how do you think we can approach the conversation of, you know, pulling tech more into the forefront of kids who may not have the financial means, or, you know, college was never really something that they were interested in? It's like, hey, you may not have thought about computers or even been interested in this thing or coding. You may not even know what that is. But hey, let me show you this. It's probably not as big of a financial investment as a traditional university.
Right.
And there's all of these different avenues that you can take to get into tech. How do you think we bring that conversation to the forefront to increase the number of Blacks in tech and just given that exposure?
Demystification, I think, is the first thing. We don't know what you don't know. You also can't be what you can't see, right? And so it's important that, you know, folks that have the inside track, have the inside knowledge like us, that we are still frequenting, you know, places where we can share, the opportunities in tech, demystifying it for people. Like, hey, it's actually not that hard. You have a laptop, go ahead and do this thing or that. Also educating ourselves on the newer opportunities that are coming. Because the reality is, the things that we're working on today, right now, we're working on the COBOL of 20 years from now or 10 years from now. We're going to be those old folks walking, I remember when I used to program Java, right? And they're like, oh my goodness, you're like a dinosaur, right? Because the kids of today, their applications, right? You know, I'll give you an example. There's a thing called Roblox, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have an account. I've never used it. My kids aren't really on it. We don't do a lot of video games, but, you know, the point is, it's a very popular thing. And like, someone with very minimal barrier to entry, one of these kids could get in there and make a Roblox item, you know, code something up, and they could actually earn Robux on the platform. That's exciting and interesting. The application for sort of us that are millennial plus, I think, you know, the applications are less, but the application for a kid, they're like, yeah, of course, is this all I have to do? So I think just helping them to see those modern opportunities they have, or their opportunities on the TikTok platform or whatever else it is they're using. So just helping to marry their reality with our demystified view of, hey, you actually don't need this large barrier to entry to get into technology, and just being real with them. You can provide very well for your family with some entry level education here. Now, if you want to sort of be, you know, increasingly at the levels where you want to drive large organizations, then, right, you know, that's actually where, you know, having a structured maybe 4-year program plus comes in, right? But there's a huge distance between coming in and making good money and having a path than there is to sort of, hey, I'm trying to run broad, you know, $100 million
groups. Dean, I'm going to tell you that TikTok, what the kids are doing on that platform, I'm just like, it blows my, I'm not even going to try.
They're too creative.
Something I'm like, how they like literally are editing things that normally people use this, you know, laptop with these really powerful, you know, applications to edit, and they're doing it all on their cell phone. I'm like, what?
Their world is different. And we need to accept that their world is different from ours. The world has actually changed already. And even we don't realize it. If you remember when the world changed for sort of our parents, they didn't realize it just had changed, right? And we came, you know, came into this. So I think that has already happened. Our children do not know a world that's not digital, right? They walk up to televisions and they try to touch them and do a touch screen. So
it's integrated with everything. And really where the interest in technology, I think, would come from is like whatever idea you have, kind of like what you're saying with Jamity, like you had a technical reason to be doing things. There's, you know, not very many businesses today where you can't think of, I need to bring in some sort of path for people to access me or access my business or access my ideas digitally. And so they need to be thinking about that kind of that side of the equation. The other thing is getting your foot in the door, and you're talking about, oh, the difference between entry level and that. The other thing that's great, I think, about our industry is a lot of companies, you know, once you get your foot in the door, they'll help you with that 4-year degree. There's a lot of companies that offer that as a, you know, as a benefit for their employees. So if you can demonstrate, you know, the basics and get in there and then kind of leverage the resources that companies are offering to, you know, reach whatever goal you have.
Right. Exactly. Like tons of educational assistance programs and things, if you just get in the door. Right. So, I agree 100% that those opportunities are there.
So that kind of segues into, what do you think companies should be doing to attract more Black engineers to their department?
I think that, you know, there's a twofold. So there's sort of what we need to do today, like right this second, because as we know, no matter which company you're at, but when you do actually see the numbers, they're sad and dismal. So there's work that needs to happen today to go in, invest and take a risk, right? Just like any other business investment, there's going to be risk involved. You know, if you're going to have to sort of invest in 10 people to get 5 that work, right? And 5 that really return on that investment. But you have to be willing to take the risk just as you are. You can't be looking for a non-risk opportunity. Well, I'm trying to find the best diverse talent. Well, where is that, right? You know, because, you know, maybe these people haven't had the opportunities. Maybe, you know, maybe this person's already sort of a leader within your company at a lower scale. And, you know, talent attracts talent. Right. Again, you can't be what you can't see. Absolutely. So you may have to do that investment, not just externally. Right. External investment is important. Right. Getting out to your HBCUs and not being lazy about it as well. HBCUs, we all point at HBCUs because that's the easy place. Right. That's the gimme. If that's the only piece of your strategy, then I think that's sort of somewhat of a lazy approach, right? There are other places. Go find the places, all right? Go outside, right? And sort of be where the people are, and you'll be able to find good talent along with HBCUs and some of those other opportunities. So outside, but then also inside. You got to invest in the people that you have already, right? Provide them opportunities. Provide them with a chance to, you know, to fail. That's something that I always say. Everybody needs the opportunity to fail. Only by jumping in the pool will you understand. Only by doing your the first instance of your podcast will you realize, oh, this automatic lighting is going to be a challenge. You only know that if you do it. That's not something you'd jot it down or check the lights, right? So everyone needs an opportunity to be given an opportunity. So invest internally. Find your people. Like I said, of 10 people invested in, they're all not going to work, right? But maybe 5 out of 10 works. And then those 5 people are now people that others can see in the community. Like, man, I like what that person's doing. What do you do, ma'am? Right? How can I do what you do? And they come in that way. So I would say invest for the today. That's what you need to do. For the tomorrow, they need to sort of get in the community and do even more, you know, deep investment in terms of just presence. right? What is your company? What do you do? I didn't even know that what you did was like technology. How come you're like a fast food chain with like a whole tech department?
Right.
No, people don't understand that. Right? Oh, yeah. This is what your tech department at fast food chain, corporate chain does, right? Get out there and let people see what the opportunities are so that the kids can start looking, say, okay, well, that's the thing I'm aiming for because I'm actually interested in fast food and I can apply this thing to it, right? That's what I would say.
So Dean, I heard you talk a little bit earlier about you mentor kids, and I want to touch a little bit on, and I don't know if it's just my timeline that's more prevalent, but there's been a huge conversation about the imposter syndrome. And I think it's really a big thing in the Black community because, you know, you think about your worth and then the exposure to things and it's like, oh my God, I got this great opportunity, but I'm so afraid I'm going to mess it up and just, I have to be perfect at everything. I think one, the comment that you made about leaders allowing their people to jump in and make mistakes, making it a safe space to do that. How do you talk to the youth about, you know, one, knowing your worth, if you're invited to the table, you know, understand that you've earned that seat. And how do you deal with that in the day to day on your teams? I'm sure that you have amazing people working with you, but I'm sure each individual may have doubts about certain things. And how do you support them in, you know, kind of stepping into that space and relying on the skills and the knowledge that they already have?
I think that's also a great question. I even got goosebumps on that one because that is one of the key things that I share, right? So I'll share it here and, you know, so folks can hear. So myself, right? Obviously, I'm the beneficiary of said investment, right? Folks were invested in me and in my career and continue to do so. I had an executive coach, right? Because, you know, as a person, one, you have to invest in yourself as well, right? And so I did that in various areas, whether it be through reading, through other things. But I said, hey, you know, I this is where I am. I need, you know, someone to sort of help me to have an objective view. And I plunked down on the table, hey, I have imposter syndrome. Let's work on that. That was sort of my goal. And what I realized by the end of that sort of program or with that coach was that I really didn't, right? We dug into that and we intentionally dug into that, right? What were the fears? What are the different things? There are things that we sort of peg as this is the imposter syndrome, right? Let me pause that piece there and then say what was happening in parallel, right? So in parallel, being that I had been the beneficiary of investment and I'm working with various people, and you know, you start to confide in people and they confide in you. And then someone else that's from a different background is saying, hey, I've got imposter syndrome. I'm like, what? And I'm listening intently like, wow. So this is not necessarily, you know, something where coming from our background or, you know, we're dealing with, right? Everyone's having these feelings. Like, am I going to mess up on this job? Right. I'm LeBron James. Am I going to win the championship or am I going to miss the critical shot? So I think, you know, it's important that one, we understand that these feelings are normal, right? Mm-hmm. We're human beings that want to do a good job, want to be seen as doing a great job. And so those things, I don't think that necessarily, if we tag them as simply just imposter syndrome, we may be missing opportunity. It may just be normal anxiety that can be managed. It may be other things. And then once you realize that everyone else is dealing with that too, it takes a lot of the pressure off of you because then this isn't just some solitary thing that you're moving. You know, you're the only one dealing with. Everyone's dealing with these emotions. I've had the opportunity to see very senior leaders, right? Say, oh, you know, I deal with this or I'm an introvert or something like that. I'm like, wow, just them saying that gave me the confidence to know that these are normal feelings that we can then just work through. So that's what I would share on sort of the imposter syndrome piece. Just know that you are good enough. Everyone's going through the same feelings and you just got to do a good job, right?
I love
that. So is there, have you seen any good leadership development programs that are helping people with the kind of transition or the career pathing to, you know, like you said, we want to see us in every level, and we tend to be at the lower levels, and we don't see as many at the higher levels. So how do we make that transition to leadership?
Yeah. One is, again, like we all know the numbers, and so it's few and far between. But what I've done in my career is sort of Ken Chenault person that I've been looking at the entire time. Are you familiar with Ken Chenault?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Take a look. So he was, leading American Express, right? So he was a CEO over there, Black man, leading a very large, important company. And just looking at the things that he would say, I started trying to consume all the content and mimic the mannerisms and all the things, right? Because you can't be what you can't see.
Right.
But here's someone playing at the highest level, right? So even if you don't have those sort of examples in your space, you know, be intentional about looking outside for people that, you know, may be in those spaces in other areas and consume their content, you know, and learn as much as you can, you know, on these folks, right? So that's one thing I did. I was in a specific type of program back at GSK where I saw that being done very well, which I think is a good opportunity for companies to replicate. So they brought together this program of diverse folks, you know, men and women. So they had us sort of sectioned off, right? But you would meet once a month. And that was one of the most powerful programs that I've been in, simply because at the first meeting, everyone still sort of has their professional guard up and things like that. But as we continue to meet and build up a camaraderie, like all the things, all the sort of barriers broke down, and we started to be able to have real conversation. So, you know, by the third or fourth meeting, you know, you ask someone, hey, how are you showing up this month? Right. And person's like, I'm not, and this is a strong leader, right? The person's uh-huh. like, hey, I'm not, right? I'm not into it today because this is what's going on at home and these different things. And you start to get the inside track that, okay, I'm not the only one dealing with stuff and trying to do a great job. So those types of programs are programs that the company can invest in, you know, so folks can have those camaraderie groups, but then also, you know, just being that where we are in our timeline from a diversity perspective, it's good to look and identify the leaders in various spaces that are doing the things that we want to doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have a off-center question. You keep talking about technology and the culture. I just wanted to know who your favorite artists were, because you mentioned a few.
Like music artists?
Yeah, music-wise.
Yeah.
Now so you're speaking my language, girl.
Yes, do it. And
listen, so Jenny is here for the tech. I am here for the culture.
Look, I love it.
I probably should have said that up front, but now, yes, let's do that.
I love it. I mean, my it's always intertwined for me. So I mean, my all-time favorite was always Jay-Z, right? And you know, for obvious reasons. And then even in the later years, I think Jay-Z to me, along with Ken Chenault, provides the, if there's a persona that I'd like to emulate, right, with a little bit of culture with my tech, it's that. And then to see Jay-Z sort of transcend even the culture and become this leader in tech, an investor in tech, an avid investor, you know, I think brings me joy and gives, I think, a lot of, because the Ken Chenault model is very polished, right? And I fear that sometimes our young people might look at, for example, a Ken Chenault, and they don't identify, right? They may say, you know, this guy has the same skin color as me, but we're not the same, right? The energy's not the same. But when you look at a Jay-Z, that's definitely the same energy, right? That's uh-huh. the type of energy that we want. And it's important because as we think about being leaders in this generation, I think it's important that we lead authentically. And to for a lot of us to lead authentically, the energy is going to come off very Jay-Z like, right?
So what I was going to say is, and I my nerdy self is always kind of like this, is I want, right? I like I think the fact that, you know, who are the household names in technology, right? How do we, for Black people in technology, like, I want people to know that those names. So you've mentioned Ken Chenault, and I'm like, I don't know who that is. I need to look up and see.
Yes.
As you're saying, like, if you're like, Jay-Z and this guy are the guys, I'm like, oh, I need to know about this person, and more people need to know more about this person. So that's definitely going to be my homework. Because, yeah, we just need to, you know, I just want to expose people.
Yes.
Expose me. Yeah, you can't be what you can't see. I throw out the names too, because there's just so many. I've always wanted to be a study of tech and business, and, you know, overlay it with the culture. So whether it be Ursula Burns, you know, that was running Xerox, right? You know, and others, like, in various other companies, right? It's just good for us to look and see how are we doing it, and then see what you can take, because there are different things that we could take from some folks. Say, okay, I like how this person speaks, or I like how this person, maybe I could do this area a little bit better. I could mix this with that. And then you become a sort of package that then someone else could look at and say, okay, I'll take 80% of that, but I'll do the other 20% my way or a lot better. And that's how we sort of build, because it's important that the authenticity piece is important. We can't lead. When we say diversity, we do have a diversity of, you know, sort of race, right? Let's be transparent here, right? So we do have that. And that is something specifically that we need to solve. But along with bringing in diversity, investing in diversity, we also do need diversity of thought. Absolutely. Right? So for example, I grew up poor in Jamaica with a grandmother that would always say, oh, you know, we don't have money for this or that. We know the stereotypical Black grandmother, right? And I've brought the same sort of pseudo frugal approach to how I approach leading, you know, teams or leading projects. Do we really need the bloat, right? You know, that's my grandmother talking, but I'm leading from my own roots or my own authentic experience. And I expect someone else that has a different background to lead from their authentic experience. So we can't replicate someone else. We have to find out only by being ourselves can we really bring something new to the table that pushes us to the top, right?
Yeah. I think another interesting perspective from, not necessarily perspective, but what's interesting about going back to Jay-Z's evolution as a person, you know, I think coming from a lot of Black neighborhoods, you know, you have kids who they want to put on this hard shell, right? And I think his growth throughout his career, where he was doing all of these things that he was rapping about in his early career, and watching him grow up through that and how his perspective on life changed, how he was able to maintain his authenticity, but also change his perspective. And the more that he educated himself, the way his kind of changed, and letting people know, like, it's okay to evolve. It's okay to sort of change from, no one is the same that they were, you know, a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Don't box yourself into this one image that you think people will only like you as. You know, you have to grow for yourself. And I think leading authentically means leaning into, okay, that's who I was, you know, maybe 2 years ago, but here's the work that I've done from those 2 years, and here's where I am now.
And, definitely,
you know, helping people understand you also need to grow. I mean, anybody who's expecting you to be the same person that you were 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago, that's unrealistic. It's absolutely unrealistic.
No, it is. It definitely is. You make a great point. You know, what Jay-Z also, what he's provided is just, no pun intended, a blueprint, if you will, for how, what does it look like, right? Because on the one hand, I think there was fear in, well, do I have to become someone else to be successful? So, growth is one thing. Growth means I've added new layers to me, right? And I've also shed some old things, but I'm still me. And right, that's the authentic thing. I think for this millennial plus group was like, okay, well, how can I grow without shedding all that is, right? I still want to be me at the end of the day. That's what makes me comfortable. And then we used to sort of say that in different kludgy ways, like, oh, do you want to be real? Or, you know, the different things that people would be saying. It's really, really what they're saying is, how can I be authentic? How can I maintain me, but add new layers to the game? How can I show up as me? How can I, because only then can I be respected, right? If I'm trying to be someone else, then I'm not comfortable and you can see the discomfort in my face. So I think that that's one thing that he's consistently provided is that path of how can you still be the Jay-Z? So he's still the same Jay-Z he was at core,
yes.
But he has a family. So that's changed him. He has businesses, he's busy. He's doing these things and that's changed him. And guess what? He's okay with that, right? He's doing it his way. I think that that's the inspiration for a lot, should be an inspiration for a lot of our young people that want to just be themselves, but contribute at a high level.
And I think also being comfortable with saying, this is who I am today. I understand that you knew me as this,
right.
But saying and deciding that this is who I am today. The core of me is still the same, but it may be a little bit more educated, or I may have added some new things or shedded, like you said, some of those old layers, but my core values are still the same. My priorities may have shifted a little bit, or, you know, things of that nature. So just being confident and standing in, this is who I am at, you know, this phase in my life because of, you know, my growth or what happened.
Right. The people that they're really young men that I mentor. They're not sort of, you know, children per se. So they're like 20s, maybe mid-20s, the folks that I'm mentoring. And that's pretty much what I try to instill to them. Like, hey, you know, trying to help them to navigate that path. Right. How do I become a corporate person or an entrepreneur and maintain maintain exactly who I am, but learn these new things and be vulnerable. Right. Because a lot of learning requires you to say, I don't.
Right. Yes.
Regardless of who you are or what the situation is you're in, it requires for you to say, hey, I just don't know. And so I want to know. Right. And then you start beating down the doors. But that could become a very vulnerable place for some people to sort of really say, hey, I don't know, right?
And also recognizing that the thing that makes you uniquely you and you're different than the other people that you're looking at is the magic thing that's going to, you know, push you or differentiate you or contribute to your success. So recognizing that in yourself and how to apply it to those goals that you have.
I would invest, I would bet all of my lunch money on that, right? I believe that what you just said to, you know, even beyond might, I do think that that is the thing that's going to push you sort of over the sort of whatever barriers there are, that finding that true authenticity, because when you find the authenticity, then comes the confidence.
Yes.
And confidence is universal. Right. Confidence is universal. It's magnetic. It's reassuring. And that's what people need. Right. That people who are around. Right. Nobody, you know, everyone wants to feel that and then be inspired or have that flow over to them. So for us, looking at, you know, sort of the diverse path and getting in, we have to find that authenticity, because then comes your confidence in any situation. Once I was able to build personally my confidence, I could get on any call, right? Because once I realized, hey, these are human beings like me that have the same vulnerabilities, the same wants, the same aspirations, right, as me. These are meanwhile, you're sitting there thinking, oh, you know, how am I showing up? Guess what that senior leader said? How am I showing up is what they're saying. And once you sort of have that, and you know that, then your authenticity can bring confidence to that situation.
Right.
That true confidence where you're okay with the situation and you know what you're there to offer, right?
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay. So how can people get in touch with you who want to learn more words of wisdom from you?
Well, just the main and probably only area right now is LinkedIn. So I've done a cord cutting recently of all the social media except for LinkedIn. So that's the place to reach out to me. Add me. It's Odean May. So Odean May. Just find me on LinkedIn. Add me. I love to have these conversations. I'm very passionate about this topic and just seeing our people have this opportunity, or at least be aware that this opportunity is here. It's like finding a very abundant stream and trying to tell people, hey, come over, you could drink from this stream. So that's a passion. So reach out to me on LinkedIn for those conversations.
Awesome. Beautiful.
Is there any speaking engagements that you have coming up, or anything that you want to promote from your end or have to share with our audience?
No, just get in contact with me. I was doing a lot of moving around and speaking before the pandemic. I did a few during the pandemic, but then pandemics made me a real homebody.
Jennifer and I have this conversation every week. Can we just film from my house? No.
Come on. I just want to be at home.
Yeah, it's like, much, no. It's come much on, easier, right?
To shower, just put clothes on, and come outside.
Yeah, and then deal with all of that. So yeah, so nothing really to promote. Just looking forward to meeting great people, having these conversations, sharing where I can, learning from people where I can, because everybody has something to contribute, and many people have different experiences that can help to add to my game or my thought train. So just looking forward to meeting good people, diverse, non-diverse. It's like meeting people and hearing their story.
Awesome. So to wrap up, we like to do heat check, where we kind of shout out to maybe something we read on the internet, you know, something fun that's going on. Do you have a heat check for today?
What's on the internet? Well, I told you I cord cut it. So yeah. I cut the cord. So
any interesting articles or books that you're reading? Yeah. Shows that you're watching, albums that you're into,
music, movies.
I'll do a book. I will do a book. So this one, well, maybe two books. So these are two books that I'm typically close by my desk somewhere. So the first one, Startup CEO. This one's by Matt Blumberg. And I think that even whether or not you're looking to be an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur with an I, that somebody is behaving entrepreneurially within a corporation or organizational setting, I think this is a good book. It's a field guide, and it just has a lot of practical things you could do, including how to build your own personal operating system, how to manage your time well, how to, work with others, coach others, talent management, all kinds of different. So that's one book there, Startup CEO. And then the Harvard Business Review Manager's Handbook. This one's close by as well. I always get a lot of good frameworks from here, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel when it comes, having tough conversations, motivating people, right? You can always, the idea there, the theme being just getting ideas from, others who've had experiences. So those are the two books that I would offer right now.
I think I have a book.
Tell us about it.
I mean, I'm
furiously looking on the internet for the thing that I was going to talk about. So you go.
So I don't think Jennifer knows, which I don't know how she couldn't. She's been living under a rock. She's been holed up in her house since the pandemic. But so I'm a huge fan of Tabitha Brown. I don't know if you know who Tabitha Brown is. No. Okay. So she is this social media sensation, but she's also an actress, and she's been on that journey for 20 plus years. And so she just recently had her sort of big break on TikTok, of all places, at the beginning of the pandemic of last year. And so she just recently released a book called Feeding the Soul, because that's my business. And because that's my business is like her famous tagline. And she, in the book, she's talking about, basically how big of a dreamer she was and her journey on this, this past 20 plus years of wanting to be an actress. And she talks about how she would have these dreams, and they would be like these visions of what were going to happen. And so it's kind of a self-help / memoir type book, but it's really inspiring to hear someone talk about, I've been on this journey, I've had this dream for most of my life, and I saw this thing for myself, and I was working while I was waiting for this thing to happen. And just her journey of, I mean, who would have thought you see a vision of something in your teenage years and it doesn't come to fruition for another 20 something years? Like, how do you even reconcile those things? So I think listening to her story and just following her success is just, if you have, you know, something that you want to do, you know, keep believing in that thing. Life is going to come at you. There are going to be different changes that happen. But if it's something that you really, really want to do, you know, stick to that and do as much as you can to bring that dream to fruition. So
yeah,
the book is called Feeding the Soul, because that's my business.
I love it. I'm going to get that one. I think the term is called manifestation. And I practice that a lot, actually. That could be a whole separate conversation. But yeah, manifestation is a real thing. If you think about The Secret, then mm-hmm. would be a good book and documentary. You know, grab a documentary. It talks about the power of positive thinking and just thinking in general, right? Like, if you remember an event like getting a new car, and once you got that new car, you never saw that car before, but now that you have the new car, you see everyone that's just like yours. What's mm-hmm. happening there? There's no more frequency of that car happening. It's just a thing that our brain does, because information's coming from eyes, ears all day long, right? And so our brain does this thing of identifying what we see as valuable information to come in. And so then you can sort of command that by feeding and telling your brain, I want to see this. I want to see this. I want to see this. I want more of this. And magically, that's what's going to start coming to you, because every time those energies and things are around, the brain's going to be like, yes, 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 yes. Show her that one. Show her this. Right. And that's how you get to where you're going. Is manifestation is very powerful. Creating things out of nothing. I love it.
I think this podcast is my latest manifestation.
I would agree with it.
I just kind of started, hey, I'd like to do a podcast. I just told people and right. now we're doing it. So it feels good.
I love it.
I like that. I like stories of the struggle. So there's a manifestation part, but I also want to identify that things don't happen overnight. That's why yes. I like the James Brown one that Chadwick Boseman was in, where it shows, because you kind of think, oh, this person is a star. They're probably always a star, probably just A to B to C, blah, blah, blah. But I like to dig in and kind of see, hey, these are the things that blocked this person.
Right.
But they kept persevering through it. And you know, now they're the household name that they are today. So I love stories right. like that.
I love them too. Yeah.
Okay. My wedged in one, which I don't have great. I watched a YouTube video from Computer File over the weekend, which was about the Facebook outage. So they don't work for Facebook, but they were talking about, you know, how you could see that I think their theory is that Facebook just kind of isolated themselves from the network and they just kind of disappeared and they weren't able to communicate with anyone anymore. And so they kind of had some graphs on that. And then they also said what exacerbated the problem was is they eat their own dog food, so that they kind of, once they were locked out, all their operations were kind of dependent on that. So even internally, they couldn't undo it, which right. I thought was kind of interesting. Problem to have, because you know you want to encourage eating your own dog food so that
right.
you know you find problems more often. But yeah, this was kind of a downside. So unfortunately, everybody got to see that oopsie. But oopsies happen, I guess, and I'm sure they learned a lot from that.
They do. They do happen. And so the thing that, you know, one of the things I've been leaning into pretty heavily is risk management. Right. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the times we tend to focus on, well, what could go right? Well, you should know what could go right, but you should also, have a pretty good idea of what could go wrong and then put in, put into place, mitigation for those types of risks. So I'm surprised that no one did a sort of exercise in the past and said, hey, you know, if we had this disaster scenario, then that would also mean we're locked out here as well. We had a scenario like that at Capital One where we were getting creamed pretty badly by the public. Capital One's banking app was not accessible on a Friday payday. And and we were getting done over pretty good on Twitter. But the situation was that we couldn't. So Amazon was sort of a region of Amazon at that time. It was many years ago. So the architecture is vastly different now. But you know, at that time, the one region or so of Amazon, AWS, was down. And it was like, fine, we've trained for this, we've practiced. All we need to do is sort of flip all our traffic over to another region. But that required configuration files that mm-hmm. were available on Amazon, on AWS storage. So he couldn't do it. So none of the automated
lines
worked. So it was, risk mitigation is the thing.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's funny. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really enjoyed speaking with you, Sierra.
Yes, it's been a pleasure, Dean. I keep wanting to say, oh, Dean, but I'm training my brain to say, Dean.
No problem. I'll answer to either.
It's been such a great time talking to you, and I really appreciate you spending the time to talk to us today.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
We're also still workshopping our catchphrase. So to our listeners.
We're doing the finger guns.
So far, I've just got, you know.
I tell you, it's incremental progress.
It comes to me as the lights go out again.
As the lights go out again. Oh, my goodness.
But for our listeners, thank you for joining us. You know, please go out, meet people, have conversations, talk about this stuff, talk about culture, talk about technology, talk
and
about
and look up Odean. Make sure to call Odean so that he knows he's not in trouble.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.